Welcome to the You're a Financial Planner Now What podcast, an extension of the Dallas Meetup. My name is Hannah Moore, CFP and owner of Guiding Wealth Management. Today you're in for a special treat as Susan Bradley, the founder of Sudden Money, joins us to discuss the new designation, the Certified Financial Transitionist. I always enjoy listening to Susan and think you'll find her fascinating as well. I hope you enjoy.
Well, thank you, Susan, for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are? What are you working on right now? Kind of your story?
Yeah, thank you, Hannah. I appreciate being with you today. I'm Susan Bradley, and I'm the founder of the Sudden Money Institute. I'm a longtime CFP from back in the early 80s. And the Sudden Money Institute was something that was created, in my mind, out of necessity. After I had been in the practice of financial planning for over 20 years, I realized we had a big gap. I didn't have access to the information I needed, or planning models and tools and process and even a peer group to explore with when it came to helping people manage what then we called sudden money. And then we certainly realized quickly that it wasn't just about sudden money, it was about life transition events. So as a result of that experience, that gap that I found in the industry that I love dearly and that I had been involved in for so long, that gap became my, I guess it's actually my life work at this point, to figure out how to fill that gap for financial planners working with a wide range of types of clients. And so we've spent 15 years now doing a lot of field work, studying, accessing some of the best researchers that we have in the country today, continuing to refine our process and use our tools with real people through our community of financial planners. So we have been in an exploration phase, we went through a discovery phase, and now we have tightened up our process based on all the work we've done and created a new planning model for financial transitions planning.
So if I'm new to the industry, I know business models. So is it a different way of approaching financial planning? Is that what you're talking about? Or when you say, yeah, so what does that mean, like a different planning model?
Well, it's really a planning model that is an extension of a traditional financial planning model. So picture a practice of CFPs with support people or however you do it. It could be a large company or small company, a solo. And you have some business structure there that allows you to have engagements with people who want to do traditional financial planning. That's how they're mostly set up. And in traditional financial planning, you're working with people who have an idea of what they have, who they are, where they want to go. That's the beginning part. Who are you? You know, your age, your health, your goals, your assets, your income, your expectations, and that sort of thing. When you know that about someone and they want to achieve a future goal, you're trained how to put pieces together and create a plan. And if people have the discipline to follow the plan and they are consistent, they typically get where they want to go. It's a very good business practice to offer traditional financial planning. The interesting rub happens when people are not in status quo and they do not know the answers to those questions. How much they have, where they want to go, their life is changing. They may have multiple options. They're at a pivot point in life. So the way life was is dissolving or has broken or disappeared somehow, and then they're trying to rebuild this next chapter. And it turned out that traditional planning didn't give me and the people that started this with me, the planners, all very experienced people, the tools to really address the subjective personal side of that pivot point, of that life event. So your question was, is this, what is a planning model? What does it look like? So if you have an existing client who goes through a life event, you have a new set of tools to bring to that engagement that you might not have needed when they were in an accumulation or maybe a distribution phase that was predictable. When life has changed, then there's a new set of tools because the client has changed. The way the client operates, the way the client thinks, the way they process information, communicate, make decisions, the way their life operates around them, their family, their friends, their responsibilities, all of that is shifting. Think of a widow in deep grief. Think of someone who has sold their business and expected to still be in that kind of control of their lives, and they're not. And all of a sudden, they go through some kind of a drop in cognitive or executive functioning. These life events change us as human beings. So we needed a way for a traditional financial planner to make that shift with their clients and help them navigate that really important time of their life. So they may go to their client meetings a little differently. They may prepare for the client meetings differently. They may review what kind of communication the client prefers now. Do they need shorter meetings, one topic at a time, because they don't have the attention span for as much as they used to? Do they need to read a lot before they come in? Do they need to have a take-home that reminds them of what was talked about in the meeting, because, again, they're not remembering what was said? Do they need another way of viewing the possibilities? Frequently, there's more than one choice that presents itself, and how do you discern amongst those? So ways to sort and prioritize what needs to be done, because all of a sudden when the events happen, there's a sense of overwhelm. There's too much going on. All these, well, the decisions may feel equally important, and you as the planner and the client need to sort and prioritize. So we created tools for these types or these aspects of the subjective part. You pull all of that together, and what you get as a certified financial transitionist is training and process tools that can be used, that can be picked out of a lineup of discovery tools or onboarding tools or revisioning tools that you can pick out and customize using those tools for that particular client. So it isn't as linear and predictable and automated as traditional planning can be. It's very much a strong process, so you know what you're doing as a financial transitionist. You know how to pick and choose. You have a good idea of how to deliver the experience with those tools to the client to create the change that you and the client are looking for. But it's all based on the subjective side of science. It's more on psychology. It's neuroeconomics, not just economics. It's about the human being. So it was hard to build a definable, repeatable, reliable model for that personal side, which is probably why it wasn't done before. I think the industry, the profession particularly, has always needed this. We didn't need it as much as we need it today because there wasn't as much change and uncertainty as there is today. So it takes a while to put together a process that's so highly customized for the client with a sense of expertise from the financial planner that was trained on the traditional side. So it did take us a while, but we are here.
You created the designation. You talked about the Certified Financial Transitionist designation.
Right.
So who would you say this designation is for? Like, who should be, who would you recommend, who's your ideal candidate, if you would?
Well, to be a certified financial transitionist, you have to be a certified financial planner. We consider that the foundation. This is a post-CFP designation. So right away, you have someone there. we recommend that somebody have 5 years of client-facing experience. They don't have to have all those 5 years as being a CFP, but we want someone to know what it feels like to sit with someone and have those very personal, sometimes very intimate conversations about their lives and their money. So it's not for someone who is a first year in the profession. We sometimes do work with firms, and they may have some brand new advisors or people with only a year or two that they want to sit in on the training, but they would not be able to use a designation until they have 5 years client facing.
Oh, well, as you were talking, one thing that just kind of seems interesting is I feel like so many designations like throw information at you to learn, but it feels like you take like an advisor's experiences, like that is part of the education.
Yes, it's experiential learning. So for instance, we have three steps to the process, and we begin with a workshop where we introduce our primary sort of fundamental tools. So people in that workshop get an experience of, okay, this is the tool for the client to determine for themselves and to tell their advisor how they are most productive and comfortable in meetings. So we tell you about it, and then we give you the opportunity to have your direct experience with that tool. So there's a introduction in the beginning at this workshop. Sometimes we do it virtually, sometimes it's in person. And then we follow that with a 12-month curriculum, and our first course book will be out for our next round. We start a group the second month of every quarter. We're very excited that we have our, some would call it a textbook. We don't know that that's such a welcoming term, so we're calling it a course book. But this 12-month course is, each month there is a tool, there's information, and then there's an experience-based assignment. So you take the tool and you're actually using it with clients. So it's very different from the CFP experience, where you are sometimes shutting yourself out of a lot of your normal life in order to absorb this massive amount of information, and then you are tested on that information at the end. We're assessing the CEFTs as they move through the process, so you know exactly how you're doing as you move through the process. Your clients start to see the difference right away. That's one piece of feedback that we do get continually. So it's not that you wait years and years to start to really get some practical application of this work. You get it right away. Some people have left the workshop and had a client meeting right afterwards and used some of our tools. So we have a high utilization rate right in the beginning, but it's not just the tool and the worksheet or the workbook. It's how you are as this human being who has expertise. There's no doubt about that. You've got to have that. But that's the doing side. We're training people on the being side, and we're integrating both sides. So as we move through this 12-month course, we're training people on the personal side of financial planning, on the personal side of life events. But that's got to be integrated with the traditional side. You've got to integrate that with the money and the tax codes and the cash flow and the risk tolerance and all the things that are essential to good traditional financial planning. So you end up in an integrative experience, not going off to study behavioral finance or something and coming back to your business and wondering what do I do with what I just heard. We want you to integrate both sides right in that first year. And then at the end of that, or the last month of that, you're writing a case. So we want people to demonstrate the ability to use the primary tools, identify stages of transition, identify the the traits of the person in transition. Were they short attention span? Were they fogged over? Did they feel invincible? Did they withdraw and isolate? We have 9 different sets of traits that get in the way. We want to know that you as this CEFT are able to identify what's going on with client behavior, and you know how to use tools to address it. So we end up with the assessment workshop, and it's oral testing, multiple choice testing, vignettes, and written case. So that's a day and a half long. So this is serious. We have strong academics who are taking our 15 years of work and putting it into the format that you would find at a major university in an area of study. We have people in their applied linguistics field that know how to test what people know, how to increase how they know it. People who have written some major tests and programs previously in their lives. So this is different from CFP, different from all the other designations out there that are training you and training very well. There's not a designation that I would feel comfortable saying is not worthy. Depends upon who you are and what you're doing, but they are anchored in on the technical side. And it's a very important side, but there's usually not a full integration the personal side. We start on the personal side and integrate into the technical. So we flipped it around.
Okay, so just kind of on the details of the designation, you went through the 3 steps, the workshop, the 12-month curriculum, and then the assessment workshop. So it takes about a year to get the designation? Is that
right? Yeah, it would probably take you a year and a half, yeah.
Year and a half?
We have the workshop. We do a workshop. We have a scheduled workshop the first month of every quarter, and then we start a 12-month group on the second month. But sometimes people might take our January virtual workshop, for instance, and then they might not start until the second quarter. So sometimes people need that time.
Yeah, and what's the cost of it? How much does it cost to get certified?
The first step, step one with the workshop, is virtual, it's $690, and if it's in person, it's $890. And then the core course is $5,100. Most people pay monthly $425 a month. And then the in-person workshop, that's not virtual, that one has to be. And by the way, most of the core training in the 12 months, or all of it, is designed to be virtually. We literally train people in 4 continents at the same time. So that's all virtual. But the workshop has to be in person. And that's $1,200. So all in, you're just south of $7,000. And because we know this is a big commitment time-wise and it's a commitment financially, we do spend some time on the business development part of it. Because if you're going to become an expert in your local area, in this specialized area of practice of financial transitions, you need to be able to get that story out. Not with a hard marketing campaign where we're not really, you could do it, but we don't have support systems for that. We have support systems for the educational outreach to COIs, direct, passive, but direct outreach to clients for referrals. And that usually is a giant motivator for people to refer business in, because it separates you from your peers in an area that everyone seems to recognize now that we need a lot of help when we go through transition. Even certified financial transitioners need help when they go through transitions.
Susan, I'm curious. I know you from Sudden Money and have seen all your work for the last 15 years, but how did you get started in this industry profession?
Well, I'll tell you, I had an uncle who was the national sales director of a big brokerage firm. Back then it was called Payne Webber. And if people will maybe know the term, hello, thank you, Payne Webber. That was my uncle. He was a great marketer. And he thought I would be terrific at this. I had a grandfather who was a stockbroker, kind of like the gentleman stockbroker, not an aggressive kind of guy. Anyway, my uncle thought that I would be great, and he brought me into New York City to Payne Webber's office, which is very impressive. It's now UBS, very huge art collection, and, you know, the lovely dining setup and, you know, the whole thing. And I just knew this was not for me. It didn't matter how nice it was. It didn't fit. And so in disappointment, he suggested that I check out the other part of the industry. And as I was doing that, I found financial planning. And, it was back in the early 80s. We didn't really know what we didn't know how to say really what we did as financial planners. But I got the CFP designation in the early 80s. And I just fell in love with the profession. It made absolute sense. It was like coming home for me. So I started back then, and I feel like I grew up in the profession. Back then it was high interest rates, mutual funds were coming out, load mutual funds, I don't know, I think it was 8.5% was a built-in commission or sales charge back then. No load funds started to come up in the later part of the 80s. In the 90s, we started to look at charging fees and early AUM. So I kind of navigated my way through all of that so that I could be on a more of a fee basis. And as I went through it, I embraced financial literacy. I used to do money camps for kids at the Breakers Hotel with kids flown in from lots of different parts of the world, and I did that as a 1 week in the summer. I was really involved in the women and money. That was such a novel approach back then. It seems silly now. But even the idea of financial literacy for everyday people was a big deal. I remember when Morningstar came out and they were into the democratization of information. It was a radical concept back then. And by the way, nobody talked about transitions. It just didn't come up. In fact, at one point I was talking to a mutual fund company that wanted a women and money program back just in the early 2000s. It was probably like 2004. And I suggested they look at a program on women in transition, which today would make total sense to all of us. We know that 70% of the clients who hire you are in transition. Women have more money. You have that whole thing. And they thought I was talking about women in menopause.
Oh.
They really did. I was shocked. They kind of had a ew feeling when I was talking about it, and I said, I'm not sure I'm miscommunicating. Can you tell me what are you thinking? Because your faces are not registering what I thought. They said, well, why would we talk about menopause? That's ridiculous. And there were women in the room. It wasn't just men.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is just 10 years ago. And if that's really an important point. When I think about the planners that you're reaching, Hannah, they're entering the profession that has radically changed in that 10-year period and will change even more so and in a shorter period of time. Your next 5 years in this profession will bring you someplace that will look just as completely crazy compared to where we are today. Or you'll look back 5 years ago and say, I can't believe we even thought about that. Whether it's robo or the way you're charging or the AUM model goes away, you know, hard to say exactly what it will be. But the one thing I do know for sure is your clients are going to go through massive change and uncertainty. That's what the world is. And that's why people are going to be looking for real help, not just financial help, real help in figuring out how to do this next stage. It's not inherently easy, but as I went into this, I honestly, Hannah, I didn't even use the word transition when I wrote the book, Sudden Money, Managing a Financial Transition. I didn't discover the whole body of transition work until, I think, 2002, 2003. The book came out in 2000. And I discovered Bill Bridges' work. He is sort of the master. He's the leader. He's the originator in transition process, although he worked with corporations helping individuals and divisions of companies manage change. So it wasn't exactly the same, but my work paralleled his, and I would have learned so much earlier on if I had discovered him earlier, but I didn't use transitions. I had to start then and study transitions. We had to study neurology, sociology, physiology, psychology. And we don't stop. It's changing all the time. So we had to go to sciences to say, what are we seeing? What's going on? And that's really how we built our practice. I don't know if I wandered around too much on you. I apologize.
Oh, no. It's so interesting. And it's such a good perspective. Like 10 years, it was a complete, like, how much has changed in 10 years?
Yeah. And by the way, that firm, that mutual fund company, is no longer in business, but they were huge. And they had been around for a long time. And they were considered a leader in women and money. And they still thought I was talking about menopause.
That's just crazy to me.
Yeah. And, you know, welcome to the world of exponential change. So that's why right now we had to really tighten up our process, write the textbooks from an academic point of view. We had to hire the academics to do it instead of me writing this book and make it so this is real transferable knowledge and process so that it can go beyond the kind of training we do now. We really want this to be part of the profession over the long haul. I'm thinking this is a 100-year project. I'm not thinking like, oh, 5 years from now, then we'll do something else. I think this is fundamentally important. By the way, I have a friend who's thinking of her work as 500-year work, so I guess I'm short-sighted. But that's meaningful for anybody who's starting in the industry. If you're in your 30s, and you're fortunate enough to fall in love with what you're doing, because this really is a rewarding profession, you probably have another 30 to 40 years of being in the profession one way or another and building a lovely life that integrates with your work. But you will be going through exponential change, and it's exciting, it's uncomfortable, it's rewarding, it's scary. You just kind of have to get up for it and be ready for it and move as you see the changes come at you. So we needed some grounding tools that you could use no matter what's happening. We say thrive while life happens. So we, as much as we see change and we're just as in the dark as exactly what it will all mean, we wanted to have some real strong anchoring process and tools that are based on the human experience, the kind of tools that you could have used in biblical times or the kind of tools that you could have used, you know, when the country was founded and things like that. Something that transcends time and culture, gender, all that stuff. So that's really where we're at.
You've kind of given some advice, but for young people coming in, do you, like, what advice or have you already kind of gone over that?
You know, the one thing I would tell someone in this profession is to become an exquisite listener. If you did nothing else, if you didn't get any of the credentials and the training, I think you should always be pursuing and elevating. But this is so much about listening with clarity, without judgment, listening with compassion, thinking about what it really feels like to be that other human being, what does your advice and your environment look like, sound like, feel like to them? If you can develop that and not get caught in, you know, it's all about you and the things that you think that they need, you'll do beautifully and you'll enjoy it so much.
Thanks for joining us for another Euro Financial Planner Now What podcast. We appreciate Susan Bradley taking the time to join us. You can find her at the Sutton Money Institute, www.suttonmoney.com. We're glad you joined us and want to make this podcast full of relevant and rich content. If there's anything you'd like to hear or if you have any suggestions, you can reach me by email at hannah@guidingwealth.com or you can find me on Twitter @guidingwealth. If you're in Dallas, we'd love to see you at our in-person meeting on February 18th. You can find more details at fpadfw.org or by visiting financialplannerpodcast.com. On the website, financialplannerpodcast.com, you can find other episodes, show notes from today, relevant links, and you can join our email list to be the first to know of upcoming news and events. Thanks for listening.